The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We're looking here at stunning results. San Francisco, as you know, had been a center of cutting-edge criminal justice reform thanks to Chesa Boudin, the progressive prosecutor elected here in 2019. But now, after a very heavily funded recall and rising crime in this city and cities across the nation, San Francisco voters have tossed him out of office, and the nation is watching.
The progressive reforms that helped elect San Francisco's District Attorney Chesa Boudin in 2019 may have caused those same voters to toss him out of office last night. Boudin won office promising to fight inequality in the justice system, with alternatives to prison pushing against what he calls mass incarceration. Polls leading up to the election showed voters were driven by the perception of a city in decline. Homelessness and drug addiction are rampant, and crime is up. Homicides and assaults are up 11% so far this year. There's been a wave of recent hate crimes, and auto thefts touch every neighborhood.
A lot of progressives are so wed to what they believe in that they won't listen to what actual people are telling them.
Lifelong liberal Adam Westnick is one of them.
I was robbed on Mission Street. I was jumped on 6th Street. The ideology that's happening now is a little bit dangerous for the residents.
Boudin says the recall is a political tactic.
The right-wing billionaires outspent us 3-1. They exploited an environment in which people are appropriately upset. And they created an electoral dynamic where we were literally shadow boxing.
But for Wesnick, things feel out of control.
The top cop has failed.
With this recall, DAs in other cities nationwide are now on alert.
Now, you guys, we're looking here at a place where, you know, the city has essentially tossed out someone who embodied their ideals. And the supporters of Boudin say that rolling back 50 years of tough-on-crime traditions was never going to be easy. It was never going to be politically popular. But here's the thing. When we spoke to voters here, even those who had voted him in on the strength of his progressive policies, many of them say they now voted to recall him because they simply felt that he was not doing enough to fight crime. Plus, as you mentioned, this is a real bellwether for other parts of the country. Specifically, if you look at progressive prosecutors in places like Los Angeles and Chicago, both of whom are facing possible recall efforts, you know they have to be watching this very closely.
Indeed, lots and lots of progressives watching closely what's happening in California. That, of course, is regarding the DA in San Francisco. There's a big-time mayoral race in Los Angeles right now. People in these left-wing cities, they're speaking up. They're giving their voice the only way they know how, booting some of these radical communists out of office. And this is in San Francisco. I like how Boudin blames the right-wing billionaires as if right-wingers have ever had just this powerful influence in the city of San Francisco. That's been a deep, dark, blue city in for decades. But now you see people, they've had enough. They're fed up. Their cars are being stolen. They're being carjacked. Their front windows of the stores are being bashed out time and again. And if you look at the percentages, it's really pretty amazing. It was 61% to 38%. I mean, he didn't just lose barely. He got recalled. He's in there in 2019. And just think of the timing here. Here's a BLM activist, basically. He's voted in. What better time to come in San Francisco, 2019? Then you've got the St. George Floyd riots the following summer. You've got all of this momentum behind BLM and defund the police. And now he's gone. Now Boudin is gone. The tide is shifting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily, broadcasting to you again live on another rainy day here in central Oklahoma. We've had so much rain here in the last few weeks. It's good for the campus. Everything is beautifully green. In any event, it's nice and cozy and dry here in the studio. You can get to the live audio stream of this show, of course, through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. To get to the live video stream, which I have playing every day when we broadcast here in the studio, you go to our very own website. That's thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live, and it takes you right to the live stream page. You've also got the last 10 or 15 podcasts posted after the fact in case you need to catch up on your Trumpet Daily viewing. Well, the Celtic Throne production crew, the performers, the crew took off yesterday. But all of the performers took off in a massive caravan up, I guess they're going through Kansas. I think it's about a 6-7 hour drive to where they rest this evening. And then it's on into Denver tomorrow afternoon for the Thursday evening performance. Denver, Colorado, just go to the Celtic Throne.com website to find out all the cities where they'll be playing near you, hopefully. You've got Denver, you've got Rapid City coming up, you've got Amarillo, Texas, and then back here in Edmond, Oklahoma for another showing, I believe, on June 19th. So, if you haven't seen the show, as I've told you, this is new and improved. It was hard to beat last summer, but we've actually made improvements in the production. And it'll be interesting to see if you notice them. Another personal note here, just to update you on the bird that we were taking care of. My wife, well, we took it over to the 7-acre lake just outside the studio here. We're all about to leave town. It's getting a little bit too big for us. It's not quite big enough, I think, to fly around, but there you can see it working its way down to the 7-acre lake. My wife said the bird needs to have a water source, so let's take it there. There's quite a few other killdeer around that area that we see from time to time. So hopefully it found safe haven last evening, and it does seem like it's big enough to fend for itself, but we'll see. We let it go. We had a little bit of a little family gathering as we did it, and hoped for the best. So there you go. The bird stories are back. They probably won't come quite as fast and furious as they did at Edstone when I had the bird feeder not only outside my office window, but we had a camera on it 24/7, and so we were able to get some pretty exciting footage. We haven't yet done that for the feeders at the house here in Edmond, but maybe one day we'll have a camera to capture some of the bird activity outside our house window. My father had this article back in February, just a couple months ago, Barack Obama exposed, and in this he spoke about how the American, the corruption in government, the evil, that it is being exposed and that they will be brought to justice. We had a Trumpet brief go out on Tuesday of this week about the Sussman verdict and how that even though he was found not guilty by that jury in Washington, D.C., more and more revelations are being made known about the corruption in the Clinton camp and the Biden camp, the Obama people. There's this story on Hunter Biden. It's toward the end of my notes. But just more scandalous activity. And the things that – it's not even just that he committed all of these vile acts. It's that he goes on the circuit. He goes around the country. The propaganda press, they sit down and they yuck it up with him. They have fun. They laugh. They laugh at he's there naked with a firearm that he got illegally. And all that we're hearing about the gun debate, here's the president's own son. He's guilty. He's a felony of obtaining a firearm illegally. And yet, just a slap on the wrist. Well, really, not even that. There's another story later in my notes about these BLM activists, these two lawyers that threw a pipe bomb into a police vehicle. and the federal prosecutors there, they're backing away, and they want it to be a lighter sentence, maybe something like 12 to 18 months instead of 5 or 10 years. They threw a bomb at a police car during the peak level of BLM rioting, and then they brag about it later. Hey, we had no choice. We had to get people's attention. And meanwhile, you've got this big charade. You've got this big phony investigation, the January 6th Commission, that's coming out with its primetime revelations tomorrow evening. They're all going to cover it. Yeah, we've got to go after Proud Boys. Donald Trump's right connected to them. Grandma, of course, that took the selfie. If she's still rotting in jail, no problem. And yet these BLM activists that threw bombs at police officers, you've got the feds already backing away just to make sure they only get a slap on the wrist. Because after all, they're radical communists. And we don't want to come too hard after them. It's got to be the Trump supporters. Well, what do just ordinary people in radical left-wing cities like San Francisco, what do they have to say about all of these progressive woke policies? They see their city in decline, as you heard in that opening montage there from MSNBC. That was on MSNBC just a couple hours ago. A city in decline. Everyone sees it. And instead of getting up there and owning it, you've got this Chesa Boudin saying, oh, we were outspent. Yeah, these Republicans. Did you know Republicans have real power and influence in San Francisco? Well, actually, I didn't know that. That's news to me. They voted him out. My father writes here in this article, this is Barack Obama Exposed, it says the level of corruption in the United States government is being uncovered bit by bit, see, just like with the Sussman trial, and it is far deeper than even we realized, but to this point, there's been very little reckoning. Mountains of criminal conduct have gone unpunished. A great many members of our ruling class believe they are above the law, and they operate with impunity and arrogance. Many Americans are angry and weary about this. They just operate with impunity, with arrogance. Hey, let those criminals out of jail. If they go into Walgreens in San Francisco, and it's as long as it's under $1,000, this is the way this DA thought. I mean, don't prosecute those kinds of crimes, because these are people that just need to get by. They need some help, some assistance. So let them rob away. Let them just, and you see pictures of it on Twitter still. And it's not even just San Francisco. I saw one just a minute ago, Washington, D.C. Two people with a cart in a drugstore just filling up the cart and walking out. That's just commonplace now in the United States of America. At least in the big cities of the United States of America. My father said in that February piece, but I believe the tide is turning. Well, maybe last night was a pretty good indicator. The tide turning in San Francisco. It says, we're about to see a sizable amount of corruption brought to justice. It says, God is at work. Just one last bit here. As 2 Kings 14:27 says, though Satan is working to destroy America and to blot out the name of Israel, God is going to stop it. See, we have to see God's hand in this. We've got to get God's perspective. It's just too easy to get caught up in the weeds of Democrat, Republican, midterm elections, this particular primary, whatever it is. But it says here that God is going to stop it by the hand of Jeroboam, speaking of a modern-day type of King Jeroboam II of ancient Israel. It says that man is Donald Trump. That man is Donald Trump, the man that so many on the progressive left absolutely despise. And here they are. They've had months and months and months to prepare for this prime-time revelation. And you watch, it'll be a big nothing burger that they try to make a big deal out of. But people don't care. People don't care about the January 6th Commission appointed by Pelosi. Just all radical Democrats, even the two that call themselves Republican. They're Democrats through and through. How's that for fairness and justice when you've got this committee investigating January 6th and they're all radical Democrats? All of them. They're all hardcore communists. And Liz Cheney, by the way, she's behind in her race, her primary race for Wyoming, by something like 60 to 30. 70 to 30, I forget what it was. We gave it to you on the show just last week. But coming back to this vote in San Francisco, 61% to 38, and they sent him packing. I mean, he was a BLM activist. This was the son, by the way, of two Weather Underground murderers. His parents, both of them, convicted for murder back in the early 1970s. And then Sam tells me he grew up with the family friend, Bill Ayers. You can't make this up. I mean, if ever there was a perfect, perfect district attorney for San Francisco, that would be Chesa Boudin. He got in there riding the wave of Black Lives Matter in 2019. And in June of 2022, the people of San Francisco, by an overwhelming number, they fired him. They fired him, this son of two murderers. That's not to say he's guilty of murder, but, you know, when you look at his policies and you look at what's going on in San Francisco, he's got blood on his hands. The crime. Who's to be held responsible for the out-of-control crime that we see on the streets of America at this moment? Listen again to this NBC report from just earlier today, clip 5.
What they're looking at here is a generalized problem. They see a convergence of all these different quality of life issues that you are describing there, Joe. They just say, okay, I have the opportunity to make a difference right now. And when we spoke in one case to a bike store owner who described a truck backing up to his front door, putting chains around it and yanking it out into the street, he said, listen, I voted for Chesa Boudin because I believe in the long-term plans. I want his progressive vision to take root, but I don't have time for that right now. I'm having to replace a $5,000 plate glass window every month, and I have to see a change right now. So there's something bigger going on here, a real clash of ideology and practicality, and we just don't know how we're going to solve that in this city yet, you guys.
That's pretty amazing. He's talking about Democrats that voted for Boudin back in 2019, and now they're voting against him. This is from the Epoch Times. It says, voters have ousted Chesa Boudin in San Francisco district as San Francisco's district attorney. Unlike California Governor Gavin Newsom's recent recall election, Boudin didn't face any opponents. On June 7, San Francisco voters were simply asked to answer yes or no to the question, shall Chesa Boudin be recalled or removed from the office of district attorney? It says, with more than 61% of the voters selecting yes, San Francisco mayor permanent replacement, San Francisco Mayor London Breed, I should say, must now appoint an interim district attorney until November 8th, when a permanent replacement will be elected. He's not even going against an opponent. These are just people that are voting. Should he go or should he stay? And 61% said he's got to go. He's got to go. We're living in a city in decline. This is beautiful San Francisco, after all. The homelessness, the drug addictions, you heard it in the opening montage. It's out of control. The Washington Post says here, the recall of San Fran attorney Chesa Boudin, whom critics called too lenient, came as angst over liberal leaders' approach to public safety also loomed large in a contest for Los Angeles mayor, where Rep. Karen Bass, and billionaire businessman Rick Caruso are projected to advance to a runoff. Caruso is the former Republican. I mean, he's coming in. Now he's a Democrat, but he's supposedly tough on crime, or that's how he's selling himself. And he led the way last night. Now, he didn't get enough to win outright. He's got to go on to a runoff with Karen Bass. But Caruso was in the lead. This is from the LA Times. It says Caruso held a narrow but widening lead over Bass in partial returns late Tuesday night. This is Los Angeles. This is San Francisco. What's next for New York or Baltimore or Chicago? Is this a sign of things to come? Does this serve as a bellwether? Well, there's already been signs in the lead up to this that tell you all you need to know about what ordinary Americans are thinking at the moment. You can be sure they're not going to be on the edges of their seat tomorrow night to watch the January 6th commission. What a joke this is turning out to be. They don't have anything else. And the New York Times gave the game away earlier this week. I have the headline here somewhere. January 6 hearings give Democrats a chance to recast midterm message. So it's all about the midterm message. It's not about justice. Otherwise, those guys that threw a bomb in the police car, they'd be going off to jail for 5-10 years. And it would be the grandma that took the selfie that would get the little slap on the wrist and say, look, let's not trespass anymore, but, you're free to go. It's nothing like that. This whole production, the circus on live TV tomorrow night, it's all about recasting the midterm message because the economy's dreadful. The southern border's wide open. The supply chains, and there's no end in sight to rising fuel costs. And the Biden people are basically admitting it now. Yeah, there's nothing more we can do about gasoline. It's just going to go up to $6. It'll be $6 by Memorial Day. Or Labor Day, sorry. It'll be $6 by the end of the summer. The New York Times says here, with their control of Congress hanging in the balance, Democrats plan to use made-for-television moments and a carefully choreographed rollout of revelations over the course of 6 hearings to remind the public of the magnitude of Mr. Trump's effort to overturn the election and to persuade voters that the coming midterm elections are a chance to hold Republicans accountable for it. This is unbelievable. They're bringing in a big ABC producer, a TV producer, because it's all about the show. It's all about the production. It's a made-for-TV movie. And they're putting it into prime time tomorrow night. And everyone's on board. All these communist actors in the propaganda press. They're happy to, they're happy to carry water for the Joe Bama people. Sure, we'll do it. We'll do it live. This isn't old news. Let's bring it to everyone's attention again, if we can. And then they sit there lecturing you that you better watch this. And how dare Fox News just go with its regular programming? It says here, Representative Jamie Raskin, Democrat of Maryland and a member of the committee, has promised the hearings will blow the roof off the House. Wow. It's going to blow the roof off the House. Yeah, an attack on Trump. We've not seen this before, have we? It says here, they have retained an experienced television executive to ensure that that happens and organized scores of watch parties across the country in hopes of generating interest. The Democrats are viewing this like it's the Super Bowl. Yeah, like people are going to get their wings and chips and drinks and gather before the January 6th committee to see what Adam Kinzinger has to say. Can you believe it? They are so out of touch. It's like the Bodine guy saying it's really that Republican influence. I mean, it's almost like an insurrection that worked its way into San Francisco. That's why we lost. They are living in a fantasy world. They're living in an alternate universe. It says here, Representative Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat of New York, said on Twitter that the hearings would fully expose the cult's extreme effort to overthrow the U.S. government. Remember that day? 4 hours. It disrupted the hearings for 4 hours. The hearings that were supposed to be about the stolen election. And here we are. 16 some months into it. And we've got all of this additional evidence, thanks to Dinesh D'Souza, in other words, about how they did, the Democrats, that is, did steal the election. And so they're going to come in with their message that here's what Donald Trump did to try to steal the election. It's right out of the mind of the devil. It's the way the devil operates. Oh, they're accusing me of stealing. Well, let's put together this big Hollywood production and tell America, if anyone tunes in, that it was Trump. It was Donald Trump who tried to steal the election. The New York Times says Democrats have met with networks about carrying the hearing live in prime time. Activists have scheduled more than 90 watch events in various states, including a flagship even at the Robert A. Taft Memorial and Carillon in Washington, where a large screen will be set up and attendees will get free ice cream. I can't even believe the New York Times is writing this. And if you're going to give away something, how about some gas for your car? That, if they gave away a free tank of gas, then everybody would show up to watch it, for sure. But no, they've got to give ice cream. Free ice cream. Joe Biden's going to be the only one who shows up. It says here, as it tries to deliver the equivalent of the Watergate hearings for the streaming era, the committee has brought on the former president of ABC News, James Goldston, a move reported earlier by Axios to help fit the hearings into six tight episodes running between 90 minutes and 2.5 hours. Six of these programs, a six-part series, a six-part movie on the January 6 findings, on the January 6 hoax. It's unbelievable. Variety magazine has this to say. On Thursday night, most major broadcast networks and cable news outlets are slated to shake up their evening programming grid to show what is expected to be a shocking report from the U.S. House Select Committee. In fact, it should say a shocking report from a group of angry left-wing communist Democrats. Surprise, surprise. They hate Donald Trump. They don't want him to seek re-election. You know, that announcement's coming anytime soon now. Anytime. And probably all of this is just meant to try to drown that out. Here again, the devil's working to blot out even the name. So desperate. This is what they're left with. Everything, there's dumpster fires all around. And now everything, they're all in on the prime time January 6th committee hearing. Fox News won't have any part of it, or at least, I guess, any live programming will go over to Fox Business. But as I understand it, Tucker and the other commentators are still going to have their shows running tomorrow evening as well. They should. Pretty amazing to watch. But as I say, they don't have anything else. So they've got to go all in on January 6th in an effort, it's not me saying this, it's the New York Times, to recast the midterm election. Look at all of the dreadful economic numbers. We've played plenty of sound bites on that just in the last few weeks. And to hear the White House spokesperson coming out and talking about just how wonderful everything is. This is all they have. January 6th, and then just the outright lies. Listen to clip one.
What we have seen is historic numbers. We are in a historic place in history, historic place right now, as we have, as we look at where we are with the economy. Very, very different than where we were a year ago. What we're trying to say, what I'm trying to say to you, is that the economy is in a better place than it has been historically. And so we feel here at this administration, and other experts as well, is that we feel that we are in a good position to take on inflation.
Wow, the economy is better than it's ever been. So go get your popcorn and watch the January 6th primetime. You've got the big committee hearing tomorrow evening. You can get free ice cream if you're in Washington, D.C. This is from Democrat elites talking about how, hey, we've done everything we can to fix the economy or to lower gas prices. There's not anything more that we can do. And then you hear this Democrat congresswoman, again, to just highlight how out of touch these elites are Listen to what she says at the end of this montage with respect to her new electric vehicle. This is clip two.
It's part of the problem with the coverage of the economy that people like White House aides and, yes, TV anchors don't feel the pinch as much as the average American. And let me put that a personal way, Gene. Do you feel the pinch? Do you feel the pain?
I think I'm not going to try to say that I, you know, feel that pain personally as much as so many families who make 50 or 60,000.
What is actually still on the table, though, to bring gas prices down at this point? Because the president has said and made very clear that there's not much left that he can do.
Unfortunately, that is the brutal reality. The president is asking for Congress and others for potential ideas. But as you say, the reality is that there isn't very much more to be done.
With respect to energy, the administration has done everything that they can to bring down energy costs.
Just on the issue of gas prices, after waiting for a long time to have enough chips in this country to finally get my electric vehicle, I got it and drove it from Michigan to here this last weekend and went by every single gas station. It didn't matter how high it was.
You would think if they have a publicist, you would think they would just play this back for them and say, you know, listen to yourself. You want to try to connect more with ordinary people. But there she is, all smiles, driving halfway across country in her electric vehicle. Who knows how long that took, that road trip. But in any event, that's the solution. The skyrocketing costs for fuel and energy, it's all part of the transformation. It's all part of the plan to move toward green energy, to move toward their radical socialist program agenda. Janet Yellen, and Tucker exposed this last night. She's I forget what the hearing was, but she's before Congress yesterday. She's the Treasury Secretary, by the way, and one who's largely responsible for out-of-control inflation. But she's going on about race relations in the United States. She had a fair bit to say about gun violence. The Treasury Secretary, and as Tucker was saying, you know, stick to the economy. Tell us how this is going to get solved. She's coming out of the hearing and a reporter asks her a serious question. Listen to her response, her non-response. Clip three.
Secretary Yellen, if you admit that you are wrong about inflation being temporary, how can you be confident that government spending is not the cause of inflation?
Heading to the car right now.
Did you ever warn the White House that increased government spending could have contributed to the inflation that we're seeing today?
We're just heading to the car. Thank you very much.
We're heading to the car right now. That's the Treasury Secretary. She can't be bothered by a reporter asking about inflation. Hey, you've got the January 6th. If she would have asked about gun violence or race relations or maybe the January 6th hearing, I wouldn't be surprised if Ms. Yellen would have had plenty to say. But inflation, because after all, she's just the Treasury Secretary. Inflation just brushes the reporter aside and carries on to her vehicle. I've had this story in the last several days. I just wanted to give you the headline again to plug our Trumpet magazine. We often refer to the tag for that publication. Tomorrow's News Today. This was from a week ago. Richard had this in his news stack at Edstone. But it's from the New York Times, June 1st. It says, Putin's threats highlight the dangers of a new, riskier nuclear era. And I forget which article Richard referred back to when he saw that headline. Yeah, I think it was from my father in 2008. 2008, where my father said, it wasn't the exact same wording there, but very similar from a Trumpet article years and years ago. And today, here's the New York Times. It says the old nuclear order, rooted in the Cold War's unthinkable outcomes, was fraying before Russia invaded Ukraine. Now it's giving way to a looming era of disorder, unlike any since the beginning of the atomic age. Well, if you're a Trumpet reader, or if you have been for years and years and years, that will sound quite familiar to you. tomorrow's news today. If you don't have a Trumpet subscription, make sure you call our operators today. They're standing by even at the moment. The toll-free number if you live in the United States, Canada, the Caribbean, it's 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can email us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
I want to arouse you to think. We've been just taking things for granted. We've been just stupefied. We haven't been awake. And I wish some of you would show a little more energy, brethren. I wish you'd get a little more earnest about this thing. Do you put earnestness in your prayers? And I think most of you don't know how to get assertive into earnest. But I tell you, it's going to take more energy, more drive, more dynamic energy than that. If I can put it in my 90th year that I've been doing, and I've been in my 90th year for almost a year now, how much more could some of you do? Could you stir yourselves up a little more than you have? Brethren, I only say this because I want you in the kingdom with me. And I'm beginning to wonder how many are going to be there.
We played that clip for you yesterday. It's from Herbert Armstrong from back in, 1982, where he was pleading with the brethren of God to just be more energetic in their work for God, to stir up some energy and some excitement and some passion for what God is doing and for what God is offering us. I mean, God's offering us eternal life. Jesus Christ is asking for our hand in marriage. You can read about this in Ephesians 5 and Revelation 19. I don't have time to go to all the verses. But the first fruits, they have the opportunity to marry Jesus Christ. God wants us to rule the universe. As the family of God, he wants us to rule the universe for all eternity. How much do you want that? How much do you desire that? How passionate are you for that calling, for that purpose, for that plan? Think of a young man that proposes to a young lady who just says to him, I don't know. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sold on this relationship. Do you think he's going to stay around for very long? Christ wants to see if we will put this relationship, our relationship with Jesus Christ and God the Father, above all else. And then that calling, that future, he wants to see us put some energy and some passion into that. Now, ultimately, we know that that real energy that we need comes from God. But Paul said to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1, he said to Timothy, stir up the spirit of God that was brought into you by the laying on of my hands. That prayer of faith. And that spirit joined together with the human spirit. You can see that in Romans 8, verses 14 to 16. To make us a child of God. To make us a son of God. And thereafter, God wants to see just how hard we'll work, how diligent we'll be about our Father's business, that work of overcoming and growing and making progress. These are some studies we've had even recently on that point about growth, that battle against sin, that putting away of the old man, overcoming. I've been referring to this booklet the last few Bible studies that we've had, How to Be an Overcomer. Win your war against sin. We've got to win it. We're in this for total victory. 1 Corinthians 9 talks about the race that we're in. And we've got to run after that prize. We're here to obtain the prize, to claim the victory. In chapter 6 of this booklet, there's a chapter about the science of spiritual warfare. And we've talked about the first 2 points of 4 that my father gives in that chapter. Number 1, morale in warfare is vitally important. It's important to have a high morale. And then the second point he makes is that we have to have maximum concentration. I got into this yesterday on the show, how that we really have to bring all of those forces to bear and have that focus on crushing the will of the enemy. And in this fight, this Christian fight we're in, we're warring against the devil, our adversary, the devil. We're warring against the world, the ways of this world. And we're warring against ourselves. Those carnal pulls of human nature, Satan's nature actually, because he's bombarding the air with his attitudes and impulses and thoughts. It's a three-pronged battle that we're in. In the science of spiritual warfare, my father says, when you have to tackle a problem, concentrate everything you have on that problem. Bring everything possible to bear on solving it. He says, do you lay siege to your big problems? A siege is a military blockade of a city or a fortified place intended to compel it to surrender. It is a persistent attack. To lay siege means to pursue diligently or persistently. It says, how about a preparing a siege against your laziness or your lust or sense of inferiority or vanity or whatever problem you face? Lay siege to it. Go right at the heart of it with everything you can. It says, destroy its will. Decimate your old man's will to rise back up, and you will conquer it. We've got to have a positive outlook in this war against sin. We can't have a defeatist approach. We can't just surrender at the first sign of resistance. We've got to fight. We've got to fight. And with God's help, we can overcome. Don't ever say, this is just, you know, this problem is just too much for me to conquer. It's too much for me to overcome. Show some resolve, rather. Stand up to your adversary. Fight for God. Fight for righteousness. Fight for truth. There's plenty of examples in the Bible and even here in our day of individuals that really have stood strong, even in the face of, well, in the case of the Laodicean era of God's church, a strong delusion. It's just all around us. And yet there have been tremendous examples of faith. People walking by faith, using the spiritual power of God, fighting against sin, overcoming our adversary, the devil. 2 Corinthians 10:3, we read these few verses just right at the end of yesterday's show. But to review that again, it says, for though we walk in the flesh, We do not war after the flesh. Our enemy, it's the spiritual realm. There is a real spirit world. There is a real Satan the devil and his demon army. You rarely hear about them in the world of traditional Christianity, but they are real. Verse 4 says, "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds." As I said yesterday, I mean, you really can uproot and crush and obliterate a stronghold in your heart and mind if you go to God for that additional strength and energy that He'll give to us if we're willing to stir it up, if we're willing to show some passion, as Mr. Armstrong said. Verse 5 says, "Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ." See, we can't be satisfied with just a few victories here and there. We have to go to work at this daily. It really and truly is a knockdown, drag-out fight or struggle. To bring every thought into alignment with Jesus Christ's thoughts. That's what it means to let the mind of Christ in, Philippians 2:5. We've got to bring those thoughts into captivity or restraint and make sure that we're focused, that we're energized, that we're serving God as that living sacrifice that He wants for us to be. Notice Revelation chapter 3. Revelation chapter 3. How do we do it? I mean, how do we kill off that old man? Well, we've got to put to death those lusts of the flesh and really concentrate on laying down our lives in the time and the energy and the effort that we need to really support God's purpose and God's plan. We've got to obviously pour our hearts out to God in prayer. Our booklet, How to Pray, another wonderful study. As far as your spiritual arsenal is concerned, you can study through Ephesians 6 and other passages similar to that about the armor of God. But these books, How to Be an Overcomer, How to Pray, I mean, those are two important how-to books that we offer free of charge. No cost, no obligation. Everything's been paid for. Notice Revelation 3 here in verse 21. It says, "To him that overcomes will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne." Do you hear this in the world of traditional Christianity? Sitting with Jesus Christ on his throne? The people that talk about the afterlife in the world of Christianity, they speak to none of this. It's just right in your Bible. God says, if you overcome, overcome what? Well, all these things I've been speaking of. If we overcome, if we conquer, just like Jesus conquered. Read about that titanic confrontation in Matthew 4 and see how that it was the devil in the end who fled from Christ. Christ put him in his place. In the end, Christ was giving the orders. In the end, Christ said, "Get thee hence." And the devil obeyed. There's a verse in James that says, if we draw near to God and submit to him and resist the devil, that he'll flee from us. If you're that close to God and you're providing some strong resistance against the devil and his influence, the devil is not stronger than God. Not even close, but he certainly will devour us if we stray far away from God. There's a formula. There's a formula in the Bible for how we can resist against him and do so with the kind of passion and the energy that we ought to show. Think about ruling with Christ if we follow in his steps, if we follow his example, 1 Peter 2:21. Then as it says here in Revelation 3, we're actually going to sit on the throne, David's throne, with Jesus Christ. Now that is something to get passionate and energetic about. That's something that ought to be exciting to us, that ought to fill us with excitement and jubilation as we think about what God is offering to his first fruits. Notice Revelation 2 and verse 26. Here again, very similar instruction here. And he that overcomes and keeps my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations, plural. Power over the nations. Can you believe that? That's what God wants to give to us. Power over nations. God is teaching us to be teachers, to be leaders, to be kings and priests. He's teaching us how to be world leaders. That's right. You may not see yourself as such, but God does. If you're numbered among the first fruits, this is what God sees. This is what God sees when he looks at us. Jesus Christ wants to give us rulership over nations when his kingdom is set up and established on this earth. And to prepare us for that calling, to prepare us for those positions of leadership, again, remember John 14, verses 2 and 3. We read it on Monday. Christ is preparing offices for us. And so every day, we've got to wake up and acknowledge the fact in front of that spiritual mirror that we're in training. We're being prepared for something much bigger, much more important, much more serious than the activities we're engaged in today. And yet, those activities take on great importance when you view it through this lens and you understand what God is preparing us for. Notice Luke 16. This is Luke 16 and verse 10. It says, he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. And then notice this, verse 11. It says, if therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? God's offering us rulership in his family for all eternity. And so this life is just a training ground. God wants us to, this is why, as I've said in recent programs, this is why the focus really of the entire Christian life is one of growth and development, overcoming. 1 Corinthians 1 says that God's called the lowly of this world. So coming on into the church or the family of God, we've got a long ways to go. None of us are the high and mighty. But if we submit to the program, as I often tell the students here at AC, then the program, if you submit to it, the change, the dramatic change that that brings about in our lives is truly phenomenal. And then the impact, of course, that that has on the growth and the development of the work. Everyone benefits. As I say, if you haven't requested a free copy of How to Be an Overcomer, you can go right to chapter 6 of this and study the science of spiritual warfare, that second point in particular, to really bring maximum concentration to your effort to overcome and to put away sin. The 800 number, it's 1-866-930-3024. Looks like we got a few seconds, just one email or two. This one's from New Zealand. Says, just wanted to say I love your show and look forward to tuning in as often as possible. I just wanted to comment on the little bird story. Where I live, we have birds fly into our windows, and I rescue them before our cat or the weka's get them. I'll have to look that up later. It says here, I then put them in a shoebox that has some small holes in there for air, leave them in there for about an hour, and then release them outside. I have about a 95% success rate. So that's someone responding to, I think it was last Friday, when I told you about the little bird that flew into our window. And just like this woman brings out, an hour later, he was off and running, or off and flying. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback, hopefully we can give some time for it on the air. The email address is td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.